They say, the harder the work, the greater the reward. This is our life's work.
Good morning. It's 9:07 a.m. here in the frigid Northeast, and this is another edition of the TDN Writers Room podcast. Joe Bianca has the week off, so Bill Finley, that's me. I will be filling in this week for him, hosting. And by the way, what a great day for Red Sox Nation. Big Poppy's going to the Hall of Fame.
Jonathan Green, general manager of DJ Stable. And Bill, I have a trivia question for you. What do David Ortiz and Bob Baffert have in common?
That probably goes down a path I don't necessarily want to talk about, John.
Well, according to Craig Robertson, neither person ever tested positive for performance-enhancing drugs, and everyone in New York is just jealous of their talents.
There you go.
Randy Nato, Franklin Ave Equine, and I've been gone all this time. I come back, I don't even have the best beard anymore.
Yeah, what is it? I'm the only guy in this whole thing that doesn't like go with the beard look. So, of course, our man Joe has quite a good beard. Well, it was a very eventful week in horse racing. It's been the case for so many weeks with all the craziness and all the trials and the drug cases and whatnot. But I thought the one, guys, that really stood out as the most important story of the week, or maybe the one that really garnered the most headlines because it was different. We have the story of Michael Sanchez, the jockey at mainly rides at Parks, was suspended 60 days when it was revealed that he was making bets in races. Now, that in and of itself is okay. You can bet on your own horses, but you cannot bet against them. And Sanchez was on occasion betting against his own horses. That is a very serious charge. However, his lawyer, Alan Pincus, who deserves, to me, some sort of award here for the greatest job in the history of being a lawyer, convinced the Pennsylvania Racing Commission that this was really about a young man who was troubled, had depression, and was using the gambling as an outlet. And he was trying in his races. He wasn't trying to lose. Therefore, he got only, and I say only because it is a pretty light sentence for what he is not only accused of, but admitted that he did, only 60 days. John, what did you think?
So just, you know, aside from the fact that in other sports, they would be permanently banned, he got a 60-day ban, basically 60-day suspension. And Bill, as you mentioned, you know, it was wonderful craftsmanship by his attorney, because obviously it wasn't his fault. It wasn't the guy's fault. He was depressed. And I'm not making light of the fact that, you know, maybe he does have, you know, he does have depression, and that's certainly, you know, mental illness is nothing to joke about. But it's certainly not also the primary excuse that you use when you say, well, that's why, you know, I was betting against myself. In a race. I mean, at some point in time, you have to be accountable. You have to be accountable for what you do. And it doesn't matter, unfortunately, if you have mental illness or you have a substance abuse problem or whatever it is. If you're doing something against the rules, then you're doing something against the rules. And you pretty much have to suffer the consequences of it. So it's a shame that somebody has to go through that kind of a personal persecution that would, you know, lend himself to do something outrageous and against the rules. But the bottom line is, it was against the rules. Now, we can also argue, was 60 days long enough? And I'm sure Brian is going to have a comment on this as well. But 60 days seems like nothing, absolutely nothing. I mean, you know, there are other instances of people in the business, trainers and jockeys, you know, alike, that have done other issues, broken other rules, and they've gotten, you know, substantially more time. And to me, as an owner who, you know, Monmouth Park came out and said, Dennis Drazen, who runs Monmouth Park, came out and said, owners cannot bet on a race because it's a conflict of interest. Well, I have about as much to do with the way my horse is going to run once it's in the gate as the guy who's selling, you know, Cracker Jacks and popcorn in the stands. Absolutely nothing. But this guy, you know, was riding the horse. He was on the horse. If there's anybody who has any more specific influence on a horse race, once the gate opens, it's the jockey.
My big question is, and maybe I missed this, but I didn't see anything, is do we know how much money he was betting? Because to me, that would really speak to intent and everything. I mean, if he was betting $5 a race and it was some weird action bet and the lawyer's explanation is valid, it's one thing. And maybe that explains why the suspension was as short as it is.
My visceral reaction. Can I just jump in because I have answer that question? Then I want to go back to you. And you weren't the first one to bring that up. So I reported on the story the day it broke. And then the following day, I contacted, again, his attorney, Alan Pincus. And I'll just read you verbatim from my text to him to and his reply. Alan, a lot of people have been asking me how much Michael was betting. Can you shed any more light on that or anything else that will explain the betting frenzy you described? His answer was a few hundred a race. Doesn't tell us much, but it was not five. It was not two to show on the favorite. At least we know that.
Yeah. Man, he really should have been. Didn't he win in a couple huge prices? He could have made some scores if he was betting his own horses in those races. Yeah, I don't know. My visceral reaction when I first heard it, like on when it first broke on Twitter or whatever, my first reaction was ban this guy for life. And you guys are right. The lawyer did a great job spinning it. You almost kind of feel sorry for the guy. I don't know. I mean, obviously, we don't have all the details. It does seem like 60 is a little bit of a weak suspension, just given that it's just a cardinal sin for somebody, for a jockey.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much agree with you guys. First of all, I've never met the Michael Sanchez. People who know him have told me that they really like him. He's a likable guy. Matter of fact, somebody who's very clued in said, if you would ask me who was the last jockey at Parks be involved in a scandal like that, I would have said Michael Sanchez. You know, I am sympathetic to the depression scenario, but I think that you guys are right that it's like Pete Rose betting on baseball. You know, now Pete Rose, he never came out and said, I did it because I was depressed or anything like that. But, you know, there's a line that Major League Baseball says you cannot cross, just cannot ever cross this line. And he crossed it and he was banned for life from the game. 60 days just is not nearly enough, no matter the circumstances. So do you want to ban him for life? Do you want to ban him for 5 years, 10 years? I think that would be more appropriate. So a couple more points. He may not be done with this because presumably he also pulled the same shenanigans when riding in New York and Maryland. So the New York and Maryland racing commissions could come out with separate rulings of their own saying, you know, we don't, what happened in Pennsylvania has nothing to do with us. On such and such a date, you bet against yourself in the third race at Laurel or the fifth race at Aqueduct. We are going to ban you for X amount of years, et cetera. The other thing that, and Brian, you brought this up, you know, again, maybe it doesn't matter if he was betting, if he was riding a 3-5 shot and he bet 10,000 to win on the second choice in the race, or if he bet 2 to show on, you know, because he liked the name of a horse. Probably that doesn't really matter because of what we've said here. It's a line you can't cross. However, I would love to see the printout of his bets. We're never going to see it. I mean, the Pennsylvania Racing Commission is never going to release that. Michael Sanchez's attorney is never going to release that. But that would answer a lot of questions. You know, was he betting trifectas and riding the favorite and not including his horse in the trifecta? Or was he just betting 20 to win on some horse? You know, that would answer an awful lot of questions there. So we'll see. I don't think we've heard the end of the story because of the reasons I brought up with New York and Maryland perhaps taking action against him. But, you know, I think at least we're all in agreement. 60 days it seems very, very light, and that Alan Pincus is the greatest lawyer that ever lived in the history of thoroughbred horse racing.
I know who I'm calling next time I get a DUI or something. This is an infomercial for Alan Pincus.
There you go.
I mean, he's got to be one of the greatest lawyers of all time.
Yes, and you can call him at 1-888. I am a good lawyer. I want to remind you that the TDN and Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. Keeneland Spring Meet returns April 8th through the 29th. New Keeneland Select accounts that wager $300 in the first 30 days earn $100 back with our sign-up bonus. Visit KeenelandSelect.com to sign up. Well, this weekend at Gulfstream Park is going to be a race that I know we've all been looking forward to since the Breeders' Cup. And it's one of those throwdown races. I love these things. And of course, I'm talking about the Pegasus World Cup. And let's see, I didn't even count up how many are entered in here, but it doesn't matter how many there are because this is a race where the focal point is on two horses and two horses only. Whoever the heck is going to be the third choice in this race is probably going to be about 15-1, which tells you the dominance of Nick's Go and Life is Good. The race was drawn on Tuesday. Nick's Go draws the rail. This will be his last career start before he goes off to the breeding shed. And then Life is Good drew the four post position. Lots of questions about this race. Number one, who is the better horse of the two is one. And number two, I think, is the pace scenario. You have two horses that seem to have the lead, very, very fast horses. Any chance they're going to burn each other out and set it up for some crazy long shot in here. But yeah, this is a race that I think even come Breeders' Cup time later on in the fall or at the end of the year, we'll be looking back at this and saying this perhaps was the race of the year. It's that good. John, what do you think?
Bill, I think this comes down to, you know, Alidar affirmed, Superman, Batman, you know, I mean, it's really a mano kind of race. I know there are nine horses in the race, but it really comes down to Nixco and Life is Good. And actually, it's probably going to be those two horses really from the time the gate opens. Both of them have a front running style. You know, Nixco obviously has inherited the rail. So, you know, he's going to Nixco and go and go. And, you know, he hasn't packed it in if he has an easy lead. Life is Good is trying to do something he's never done before, which is go nine furlongs, which is, you know, doesn't sound like a lot further than the mile that he's dominated the past two races, but it is a little bit further. He also likes to always go to the front. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, if either Rosario, who's riding Nixco, or Irad Ortiz on Life is Good, if either of them are going to, you know, give the other horse the lead on its own, or if they're going to go, you know, gate to wire together. But, you know, Bill, you nailed all the other things. I mean, the third best horse in the race is probably going to be Double Digits. And you know, they may be Nixco and Life is Good, may be nip and tuck all the way around the racetrack. But I think they're going to be 10 lengths up on the rest of the field. I mean, they're just so much better than the other horses. And I can understand entering a horse in this race because it's a $3 million purse. I understand trying to run for third place because that's basically what I think is going to happen. The other interesting thing in going through the race that really piqued, you know, my interest was that there's nine horses in the race. Guys, eight of the nine entries have had trainer changes at least once. I mean, you see that in a claiming race, you know, where you see nine horses in the race and a bunch of them changed hands for various reasons. But do you remember ever seeing a grade one with nine horses in it where eight of them had trainer changes? That it blew my mind. The only one that didn't was Sir Winston that Mark Cassie trades.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I kind of thought Stiletto Boy was a little interesting as a third horse to get, you know, be beaten 30 lengths, but run third. And I know he sold at one of the Horses of Racing Age sales. I think the interesting thing is just tactics between the two jockeys. To me, Life is Good as the faster horse early. He's obviously stretching out from the shorter races. On pace figures, he's faster. Nixco is like, oh, you know, get to the front in those longer races. He hasn't taken a ton of heat in some of his races. And, you know, if you give him an easy lead, he can't be caught. I mean, the way they're drawn, it's kind of interesting. I think if it was the other way, you know, Nixco would just sit off him a little bit and try to make a run. Now he's a little, his hands forced a little bit from the rail. So, I mean, I kind of think Life is Good. When you have like the Pletcher factor in Florida, he's just so good at Gulfstream. You know, kind of seems like he's got a better chance to go out there and just totally freak. But it's Nixco's last race. He's going to leave it all out there. You know, like we said, it's just going to be a really exciting race.
Well, I'll throw this question out to both you and John. You can start. Is there any chance we're going to see a repeat of the Breeders' Cup Distaff, where these two are going to go in 44 and change, and no matter how much better they are than everybody else, someone is going to come and benefit? Maybe, you know, one or two or even three horses benefit from a suicidal duel, and that this race is just going to blow up.
Yeah, I mean, you could certainly make a case for that, Bill. And I know when I was handicapping it, you know, before this morning's podcast, I was trying to come up with a horse that would take advantage of, you know, if there was a suicide type speed duel between the two favorites. And really, and this is no offense to anyone else in the race, but they're definitely a notch below. I mean, this is really so much of Nixco versus Life is Good. And I think the jockeys are going to be smart enough where they're going to know they both have good clocks in their head. They both know how to get to the front and kind of slow it down a little bit. I don't think they're going to go out there in 21 and 43 and, you know, like what Life is Good and Jackie's Warrior did in the Jerkins. I don't think it's going to be that much of a pace, but it's nine furlongs. And you know, you could make the case that The horses could just run out of gas and maybe somebody comes from off of it. But I would have a hard time betting that. To me, this is the kind of race where I really want to watch this race. But unless you're Michael Sanchez, I wouldn't bet on it.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to be the contrarian and find the horse that's going to clunk up and run by them both. It's just hard to predict. I think if I was playing the race, which I don't really plan to do, and I wanted to get cute, you know, if you like horses in the previous races and you're playing a pick four or something, I'd probably just toss the two favorites, use everybody else, and like kind of root for the meltdown. But it's hard to envision just based on the form.
One thing I wanted to add to it, I definitely agree with Brian. I think the draw here was very important, and I think it works out to Nick Scow's advantage. First of all, you know, the mile and eighth starts right on top of the turn there at Gulfstream. So not that the four post for life is good as a bad post, but, you know, the one post is a very good post. And I think that is going to dictate the race because Nick Scow, at least going into that first turn, has to maintain that inside position and presumably will be in front of Life is Good. Now, is he going to be, are they going to be right next to one another? Is he going to be a half length in front of him, a length in front of him? And Brian, I agree with you. I think all things considered, Life is Good probably is a little bit faster, but I think the post position is going to dictate because Nick Scow does not want to take back. And, you know, I could see this race looking like, I mean, we haven't had a match race of any significance in this country in many, many years. I could see this race being a match race between these two, then seven other horses, 15 lengths behind, battling it out for third. And it looked like one of those workouts you see in the morning on XBTV where these two just gallop along next to one another and then somebody in the last 16th of a mile sticks their nose in front. But having said all that, the tactics are interesting. That's fascinating. And with Nick Scow back in here and going against Life is Good, at least early on in 2022, far and away the race of the year. And it's going to be hard to top this race no matter what happens. Once again, we want to remind you that we're brought to you by Keeneland. And lots going on there right now. By the way, Keeneland will be awarding a record $7.7 million for 19 stakes set to run at their upcoming spring meet. It's also announced last week that Keeneland will host their April Horses of Racing Age sale following the final race on closing day of the meet on Friday, April 29th. Also, Keeneland also recently announced that 11 Keeneland sales grads are candidates for the 2021 Eclipse Awards, including Classic winner and this weekend's Pegasus contender, Nick Scow. John, you're the big sale. Oh, Brian, too, if you want to weigh in on this. You know, I'm not a real familiar with the sales, or not nearly as familiar as you guys are. John, tell us the story of the April Horses of Racing Age sale.
Well, that's really been developing over the past couple of years. And I know many years ago, Keeneland was looking to supplement, you know, have additional horses being sold at their two-year-old April sale. And they found that there was a real appetite for proven horses there as well. And I think that sale part has, you know, grown and developed to the point where now it's a standalone sale. You know, people and Brian's in the racing game as well. And he'll tell you that, you know, if you have a horse that has a little bit of a proven past performance, people will spend, you know, hand over fist to get those kind of horses. And Keeneland wisely enough recognized, you know, a need in the market and are offering that kind of a sale for Horses of Racing Age sale. And Bill, one of the other exciting things that may come down the pike is that, you know, we as a show may be down there that week, the final week at Keeneland, you know, to highlight the Horses of Racing Age sale. So not only is it a sale for proven horses, but it's a week for proven podcasters.
All right. Well, stay tuned. Hopefully we'll be making a road trip to Lexington, Kentucky. Still, I make the suggestion we should do the show from Fauner Park and nobody takes me seriously, but we shall see. We'll be right back.
We'll meet you there.
Okay. We'll be right back after this message from Keeneland.
They say the harder the work, the greater the reward. And this is hard work. It's the hours put in before dawn and after dark. It's the sacrifice, the sweat, the failure, and the faith. This is our industry. This is our life's work.
Respect the law. He's earned it. A grade one winning juvenile.
Tis the law, pops the cork in the champagne.
A classic winning three-year-old.
Tis the law, is gonna win the first leg of the Triple Crown.
Five triple-digit buyers.
Respect the law, tis the law. the law.
The best son of Red Hot Sire Constitution.
He's left the others behind. He's going to win the run, Happy Travers.
Tis the law.
And welcome back. I want to remind you that the TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Colemore. With 8 winners already in 2022, Cupid is now the leading second crop sire by winners. On Saturday, he had his third stakes winner with Sterling Silver in the Franklin Square Stakes at Aqueduct for trainer Tom Albertrani. Another Ashford sire was represented by a stakes winner this weekend with Uncle Mo's 40 under in the E.R. Bradley Stakes at the Fairgrounds. He's the second stakes performer so far this year for the Uncle Mo, who also has Remsen Stakes winner Mo Donegal on this year's Derby Trail. Brian, I asked John last time, Cupid, so I'll throw it to you. Cupid stands for only $5,000. Are you pleasantly surprised as a potential buyer? They didn't raise that stud fee. It seems like a terrific bargain.
Yeah, I mean, he really came on second half of the year. Maybe it was a little quiet, just going into the two-year-old sales, and then his horses came out running, as they stretched out, as they developed. Cupid wasn't a super early precocious type, so it's not surprising that his progeny have kind of gotten better with a little more time. And he had a winner on Sunday with the most confusing name. It's like all I think it's Cupid's Charismatic Cutie. It was a debut winner, yeah. But it's like
yeah. But we were actually in that race, and I was like, this is like every word is spelled incorrectly, and the horse won like a champion.
Exactly. Yep. Okay. Well, let's get into the weekly portion of the TDN podcast where we discuss the trials and the tribulations and the druggings and all the things that we wish we weren't talking about. But unfortunately, in what's going on in this sport, we have to. And I'll just say this again, how depressing is it to think that not only is there one trial or hearing going on right now, one that involves doping, and another, that's the Seth Fishman trial, and another one, I won't use the word doping, but involves the use of medications that were prohibited on race day with Bob Baffert, and the allegations from Naira that he is quote unquote a doper, etc. It just never stops, and it's very depressing. And let's just all hope that someday this game gets its act together. But let's start with the trial of Seth Fishman and Lisa Ginelli, which is going on as we speak in a federal courthouse in Lower Manhattan. Ginelli actually got a mistrial because her lawyer tested positive for COVID. So Seth Fishman is going on. We're not seeing a lot of fireworks in this necessarily because, everything that both sides are saying is stuff that we've already heard. But I hope you guys got a chance to read the Washington Post story that ran the day the trial started last week, where Fishman did an interview with him. And I thought it was such a bunch of garbage. Here's this guy who's been accused and I say use the word allegedly, but is likely going to be convicted of doping racehorses. And he made himself out to be this like heroic figure who was just out there to save horses, and he was going to take one for all the vets in the world. And it's not me that's guilty; it's the sport. I don't get it. I don't even get why this guy went to trial. The evidence over him is overwhelming. His legal fees must be through the roof. And at the end of the day, I would be absolutely shocked if he got anything other than convicted and sent off to a long stint in prison, John.
Yeah, I think it was a situation where he knew that they had the goods on him. So rather than try to fight the good fight and say, no, I was innocent, it's not just me. The sport is corrupt. Our society is corrupt. The world is corrupt. Boo-hoo, woe is me. It was one of those kind of like, don't blame me. We should blame the world and society that we're in. And I'm just a simple pawn in the game of life. Because what else is he going to do? They have him dead to rights on wiretap. And Brian, I still love this quote from you years ago from like one of our very first shows about, don't these idiots watch The Wire? I mean, like, don't they know? Like they're screwed. He's in trouble. He's going down fast, and he's blaming everyone else except for Big Man in the Mirror, for his troubles. But yeah, Bill, I think that overall, I question what his defense is as far as why he did this, and why not just try to plea out of it and get a lesser a lesser charge. But he's going down in flames.
Yeah, I thought Bill's story, I guess Sunday night, the Week in Review, was a perfectly succinct, just sort of recap of where we are with this case. I guess the one question is, will we get a bombshell? There was some talk of maybe other trainers coming forward that were his clients. And presumably that's somebody we haven't heard from. It obviously would be kind of surprising if an active trainer stepped forward and said, you know, I bought PEDs off this guy. Maybe it'd be a retired trainer or somebody else. But I mean, that's maybe the one bombshell we might get at some point during this trial.
Yeah, a couple points here. First of all, Fishman has hired this really super high profile lawyer, Mark Fenrich, who of past clients include, of all people, El Chapo and Jeffrey Epstein. I was told that this guy charges like you can't even believe the amount of money he charges. Now, El Chapo, as I mentioned this before, is in jail for the rest of his life. And Jeffrey Epstein was in prison and hung himself. So I don't know what good this lawyer did. But I've got a suggestion. And Seth, if you're listening to the podcast right now, I think you should fire them, hire Alan Pincus. Alan Pincus will say you doped horses because you were depressed, and you'll get 15 days and you'll be back in action before the before the beginning of the Keeneland meet. So, but Brian, you're right. The most fascinating thing to come out of this, and it could be absolutely nothing or it could be huge, is that they said they were going to bring in other trainers to say, yes, I bought drugs off this guy. Now, this could be a couple possibilities. I thought one possibility is there are a couple trainers that were among the original people indicted, and then a new indictment came out and their names just disappeared. So they obviously, the government, for some reason, let them off. Maybe it's just those guys that are going to come in and testify. And then they're done in racing for the rest of their lives. And they obviously have immunity from the government. But what if, you know, some trainer who would be racing today at Aqueduct that has never been brought up with this comes forward, and we don't know if that's going to happen. Now, if they did that, the government obviously would promise them they wouldn't prosecute them. But if I'm Trainer X and I said in 2019 I bought drugs from this guy, well, then the racing commissions would have to ban the person for life. So, you know, stay tuned to that. It could be very, very interesting. All right. So the other trial going on, right? Well, is maybe not fair to call it a trial. It's a hearing. Is what's going on with Bob Baffert and Naira. And I have some comments I'm going to save for the end, but it's a little bit like the Fishman trial. It's all the same stuff that we've heard before. And the polar opposites of the story that's being presented. Naira lawyers get up there and say, this is a bad, bad man. He's basically destroyed horse racing. Get rid of him. And then Baffert's lawyers get up there and say, he's a great human being. He's a great ambassador. He never really did anything wrong. These were just innocuous overages of nothing drugs. And by the way, Naira's out to get him because the trustees that all own horses are sick of getting beat by this guy. So, you know, one side says he's Darth Vader and the other side says he's Mother Teresa. And now somebody's got to figure out, the hearing officer's got to figure out what's going on here, John.
Yeah, and basically, I think the attorney came out and said, Craig Robertson came out and said, you know, by jumping to false conclusions and ignoring the facts, Naira is, you know, on a bandwagon smear campaign to hurt my client. And my client is the Michael Jordan of the sport and, you know, and should be revered. And the other side is saying, no, he's the Lance Armstrong of the sport and should be vilified. And basically, you know, they said. In the press release, there were five undisputed facts that support, you know, why Baffert's suspension by Naira should be overturned, and then they listed four. So right off the bat, their math isn't logical, but that's beside the point. But the four points were like, you know, does the Gaming Commission have jurisdiction to make this decision? That's a legal question. The board is full of, you know, owners and trainers that are tired of getting, you know, losing to Baffert, and that's why they have a vendetta. Well, you know, most boards are comprised of people that understand the industry. You want to have people who are active in the industry and leaders in the industry to govern it, you know, in my estimation. You don't want some outsider to come in who doesn't understand the intricacies of the sport to come in and make major decisions and major rulings. So, you know, the fact that the board is comprised of other owners and people in the know in the business, that's what you want. And I understand where Robertson's coming from, because if it was the opposite, if it was a bunch of Joe Schmoes that didn't know anything about the industry, the argument would be, these are a bunch of Joe Schmoes that don't know anything about the industry. They shouldn't be able to govern and make decisions over my client. So that's a questionable call on that one. They also go on to talk about other legal, precedents and other questions. But the final one was, Robertson came out and said, of the 14 thoroughbred horse trainers in New York State, the top 14, nearly all of them have had more medical violations than Bob Baffert. Again, blaming society, the world, America and everything in between. It's not my client who's doing, he's just an innocent pawn. And just because, he's cheating because everyone else is cheating and therefore, allegedly, he shouldn't be the one person that is being singled out when the entire sport is full of cheaters and everything like that. Now, that last one, I could see the argument that maybe he shouldn't just be singled out. Like if the top 14 trainers in New York also have violations for overages, that they should be, considered, for bans and suspensions as well. But don't tell me that just because everyone else is cheating, it's okay for you to cheat.
Right. And I agree with you guys. I think the argument that has something to do with who's on the NIRA board, I don't know, that doesn't really carry a lot of weight. I looked it up. I think Baffert made 65 starts in New York, 62 starts over the past 5 years. It's not like he's a guy who's, I think he's won at 35% over that time, almost exclusively in graded stakes. It's not like he's a guy who's got three horses in every day at Aqueduct or something. He might come in for the big races, but he's not like a dominant trainer on the circuit or anything. I think if they wanted to get rid of a trainer on the New York circuit, there'd probably be someone that they'd maybe want to get rid of more. So I don't know. That seems like a strange argument to me. I think the best argument that I heard so far from Baffert's lawyers was this idea that it's hard to argue that Baffert's issues have hurt NIRA's business when they had record handle at Saratoga this year. You kind of have to prove numerically or in some tangible way how exactly Baffert's violations in other jurisdictions have impacted NIRA's business. And I don't know, when you talk about like social licensing and this kind of stuff, and I think there's some validity to it maybe, but it's hard to really prove. So I think that's maybe their best argument.
And Bill, doesn't it come down to, you're the legal eagle out of all of us, but doesn't it come down to like that NIRA is New York is a private entity, and if they wanted to?
Yeah, John, that's why I wanted to go last, because this is, to me, everything they're arguing doesn't matter.
Right.
Because, and maybe, again, I feel like to be an effective turf rider right now in 2022, you can't do it unless you have a law degree. This is ridiculous. But what this comes down to, what is on trial here is not whether Bob Baffert is a bum or Bob Baffert is being, or NIRA has a vendetta against the guy. It's whether or not NIRA has the right to ban somebody or to suspend somebody. And now the courts have largely said that, not largely, but have you always said that a private company like a Churchill Downs can ban anybody and really doesn't have to have a reason. Best example is Jeff Gural at the Meadowlands, who was just thrown out people left and right. And his explanation was, you just threw out Trainer X. He's never been caught with anything in his life. Gural will tell you, the guy cheats. I'm not stupid. He's thrown out. So what is on trial here is whether or not NIRA as a quasi-state organization follows the same, it can go the same path as a private entity. Now, if you remember, this was argued in a federal court beforehand, and the judge there said they can't throw them out without due process, but then give them due process and do what you want. So to me, this is a dog and pony show. They're giving them the quote-unquote due process. The judge I don't know if he's in the tank or not, in the bag or not. It would probably be unfair of me to accuse him of being that. But that's what's on trial here. And I believe at the end of the day, NIRA doesn't need a reason to throw Bob Baffert out. And they can throw him out because they're offended by his white hair. literally. I mean, right. You know, that it's so glaring that it gets in everybody's eyes and you've got to go. So, again, that's my take on it. But we will see. And we also have more hearings coming up, one of which we're going to get to later on the show, that as Naira is getting, like so many other people in racing and groups. It's all about the trials and the tribulations right now. XBTV, boy, is this a good week to watch XBTV, because you can pick up the Life is Good workout, and that is the official workout of the week. Life is Good, of course, going in the Pegasus on Saturday at Gulfstream. And the TDN Writers Room is brought to you by XBTV. Handicap and watch the live race races like never before. XBTV has exclusive handicapping insight and analysis, picks, morning workouts, interviews, and race replays. So it is definitely the place to go. And the workout of the week, this week's workout of the week, is Life is Good, who worked on Saturday at Palm Beach Downs, going 5 furlongs in 1 minute and 0.90, or 1:04 ahead of his start in the Pegasus World Cup. You can check out all his workouts at Palm Beach Downs over the past few months at XBTV. Did either of you get to watch that workout, and what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, he is poetry in motion. Life is Good is just the kind of horse where you stop what you're doing. If you're eating, or if you're watching other horses, or you're talking to somebody and you see Life is Good go by, you actually, I actually hold my breath, because it's like, what I want. That's the one I want in my stable. Okay, is he running for a claiming tag? Because that's exactly what you want when you see a really top-notch racehorse. Brian?
Yeah, he's a monster. I mean, we'd all like one like him. Maybe we'll put a group together, John. We can maybe make an offer. I wonder what that would take.
We'll be right back after these messages.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
And this week, our sponsors include the Pennsylvania Horse Breeders Association. And over the last 9 years, the PHBA Breeding Fund has distributed an average of $28 million each year in awards, owner bonuses, and restricted race purses. Pennsylvania Bred Program offers benefits to both owners and breeders. The owner of a PA Bred can earn up to an additional 40% on top of the purse for finishing in the money in open races. Plus, this year, the program will offer 19 $100,000 stakes and 4 $200,000 stakes just for PA Breds. You can learn more at PABred.com. John, if you're looking to put a Pennsylvania Bred into your stable, tell us how that can be done over the next couple months.
Well, the nice thing about it, Bill, is, Pennsylvania, as you mentioned, has such a robust year-round racing program with the added benefits of having a Pennsylvania Bred. And I was, really impressed to see, when I looked at the upcoming Phasic sale, that there were 9 Pennsylvania Breds that are short yearlings, including, and listen to the sire power, Frosted, Nyquist, Vino Rosso, Street Sense, and Mendelssohn. I mean, those are legitimate studs that these horses have, are by, and they're eligible for all the Pennsylvania Bred program and benefits. So, to me, it would be shocking not to buy a Pennsylvania Bred at the upcoming sale.
The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting and tax consulting advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. With over 500 clients in the horse business, they have proven strategies to save you taxes. Learn more about how they can help you at www.greenco.com. Very pleased to welcome in this week's Green Group Guest of the Week, Mike Mulvihill, who is with Fox Sports. He's the executive vice president and the head of strategy and analytics. Mike, we're bringing you in today to talk about a lot of things, but the big news that was broke a couple weeks ago was Fox's agreement with Naira from 2023 to 2030 to become the new broadcast partner for the Belmont Stakes. Beyond the obvious that it's a great race and a great sporting event, why did Fox and your team want to get involved with this?
Well, there are a couple reasons. And first of all, thank you for having me on the show. Really excited to be with you and excited about our participation in horse racing, really there were two primary motivations behind the deal for the Belmont Stakes. One is that fundamentally Fox Sports is just in the business of premium live events. You know, we want to be in the business of championship events, special events, whether that's the Super Bowl, the World Series, the Belmont Stakes, and anything else that's out there. We pride ourselves on being the leaders in live sports event consumption. You know, there's obviously a lot of sports programming that's not live event, your sports centers and Undisputed, Colin Cowherd show. But really the foundation of what we do is in the live events and the live event viewing. So anytime something comes along that could be considered a premium event, a championship event, something that's known to not just hardcore fans, but every casual American sports fan, that's always going to be something that's attractive to us. And the Belmont Stakes is obviously in that category where it's known not just to people who play the races every week, but it's something that every casual sports fan is familiar with. They know it's where the immortals of the sport are crowned and determined. And that makes it fit really naturally with what we perceive as our brand. So that's just the television programming part of it. And then separate but related, we're obviously getting more and more into the gaming business all the time. I like to say that we are evolving from being strictly a media content brand into being a media and gaming brand. That has a lot to do with the recent legalization of sports betting, but it also has to do with the partnership that we have with NYRA in NYRA Bets. And, you know, for us to be able to take on the TV rights to the Belmont Stakes, not only is that a championship event in and of itself, but it becomes an opportunity for us to really promote and try to drive new business and drive signups and new accounts for that NYRA Bets business. So it really works both as media content, which is the business we've always been in, and it works as an engine for our gaming business, which is a newer business for us.
And Mike, one of the rumors that we've heard also that's been bandied about on social media is that now that you guys are behind and involved with NYRA Bets, that maybe this is a precursor to New York having the Breeders' Cup again and having those, you know, the 2-day event, the 14 championship races come back to New York. What would that mean? You don't have to tell us the secret sauce if you guys are interested or not, but what would that mean if the Breeders' Cup did end up in New York, you know, for Fox Sports?
Well, I think it would be great for NYRA Bets, right? And it would obviously be a feather in the cap of NYRA to host an event of global significance again. I will tell you candidly that, you know, we're very, very committed to college football at that time of year. And it really would be challenging for us to ever become the new television partner of the Breeders' Cup, which is unfortunate because it's a magnificent event. I love going just as a fan. It's a great property for any media company to have, but it would be really challenging for us to find a way to make that work.
Well, Mike, sort of on the same subject that John brought it up. So now there's the four biggest events in horse racing are obvious, the three Triple Crown races and the Breeders' Cup. So you now have one of four. You kind of just told us that maybe the Breeders' Cup is not necessarily in the cards. And I don't know if there's any kind of things that like prohibit you from talking about an event that's covered by another network or not. I'm not a TV guy. I'm not really privy to that. But, you know, how about the other two Triple Crown races?
Well, I think you alluded to my answer, which is that it's a little bit out of bounds for me to speak right with a lot of specificity about properties that are currently under contract to another company. But I can tell you more broadly that, you know, as I said before, we very much consider ourselves to be in the business of championship events. We want to take seriously any opportunity that might arise to add something that's premium and special. So while I can't really talk about the other two legs of Triple Crown specifically, I think certainly they are two of many events that we would consider attractive to be part of our portfolio. And obviously a lot of other companies would consider them attractive as well.
Right. Now that's a great answer, Mike. And we appreciate that greatly. I in advance of this interview, I watched an interview that you did with Joe Buck last year before the NFL schedule was, you know, open for the public. And you said, you know, we submit a wish list to the NFL with the hopes and dreams of getting some of these premier games. What's your wish list as far as, you know, the Belmont for this upcoming season?
Well, and remember, for us, the deal kicks in 2023. So it's a wish list that we have some time to think about, right? Look, the first and foremost thing, that the obvious answer is that we would love to have a horse come to the Belmont with a chance to win the Triple Crown. I mean, that's what every racing fan hopes for. That's what NBC's hoped for a lot of years. And that would be at the top of our wish list as well. But beyond that, I think we want to see interest in racing continue to grow over these next 18 months before we get a chance to do the Belmont. The most important metric, I think, would be national handle. We had a great year in handle in 2021. We'd like to see that trend continue. I think we would like to see what every racing fan wants to see. We want to see big fields, big competitive fields in the biggest races. We want to see the horses and the riders get around the track healthy in the biggest races. We want to see the races run with competitive integrity. We want to make sure that all the rules surrounding medication are being followed and that the public has every confidence that the races are being run at the highest possible levels of integrity. So it's all that, you know, you'd love to have a horse come in with a chance to sweep the Triple Crown. But I think those other things are really important, too. You know, I think the game is making great strides in the area of integrity and public confidence. I think the wagering trends are really strong. I think the positioning of the sport as being something that's a fantastic, just giant outdoor party that 80,000 people can participate in, or 150,000 people on a Derby day. I think that's really resonating with people. And we just want to see those trends continue in the months leading up to us taking over the Belmont.
Now, Mike, you've spoken a lot about Fox and Fox Bets. And part of this is not just to have a great sporting event, but the whole gaming world and moving forward with that. So when you have the broadcast of 2023, particularly if a horse is going for the Triple Crown, John and I are going to be watching it. We are diehard racing fans. We're bettors. We know the ins and outs of the sport. And frankly, we don't care about the story about the girl in the pretty dress coming out and the 20 somethings and all that. But at the same time, you know, my Aunt Gladys is also going to watch it, doesn't know anything about horse racing and wants to know about some of the fluffy stories would appeal to her. So how do you walk that fine line?
Well, I like to think we can do both. Mm-hmm. And I think a template has been provided for us by ESPN and their presentation of Monday Night Football this year, where they have the traditional presentation on ESPN, and then they're doing the Manning cast on ESPN2, and that's getting a significant percentage of the audience. It's doing really well. It's worked out very, very well for them. I think we have an opportunity to do something similar where we can do a traditional presentation of the Belmont on Fox broadcast, and we can provide an alternate presentation for at least some part of the day on our cable platform, and tailor that really to people that are more regular players and that maybe aren't as interested in the lifestyle pieces, and they really want to dive deep into the handicapping. And I think we have a chance to do that side by side. We're still sort of exploring and figuring out exactly what that might look like. But I want to believe that by the time we get to June of 2023, we'll get that presentation that people are accustomed to for a Triple Crown race, where it's not just the horse race, but it's also the social event, the cocktails, the fashion, everything that makes it as much fun as it is. And then I think we can also do a presentation for people that use the sheets and are sheets players, or they really want to dive into workout patterns and trainer patterns and things that aren't necessarily going to totally connect for the big audience on the big network, but for that smaller audience of people that are, you know, really playing it seriously and are going to put a significant amount of money through the windows or hopefully through their Naira Bets account on that day, we can do something that's targeted specifically for them too.
Yeah. And Mike, please let Bill's question just be singular to Bill. Bill's a curmudgeon. He just wants to watch the races. The rest of us like the lifestyles, and especially when we own a horse in the race, we want people to ask us questions about, you know, who we're wearing and why we're there. So don't let curmudgeon Bill, you know, sway the way that Fox Sports does things.
We'll have the fashion questions ready for you when that day comes around.
All right, good.
I'll watch the gambling channel. How about that?
Exactly. Mike, one more final question for me, and that is, you know, just in your answers, it's obvious that you know a lot about the industry. You know, you mentioned a lot of buzzwords, you know, about the sheets and about workout tabs and things like that. Were you very interested in horse racing and that's why you got the position, or did they hand select you and all of a sudden you had to have a crash course in the industry?
Well, it's really generous of you to say that I know anything about horse racing. I think the longer that I've been a fan of the game, the less I feel that I know anything about it. It's so challenging, as you guys know. And I have been interested in it for many years. My brother works in racing. He sort of, I got him involved, and then he took that interest much further than I ever did. He's actually worked in racing publicity for a lot of years. So, you know, my interest in racing predates our association with NYRA by a lot of years. And it was really just serendipity that five and a half years ago, Tony Olivato from NYRA came into my office looking for a little bit of assistance in getting some NYRA races placed on a regional sports network. And because I have the interest in the game that I do, and specifically I love Saratoga so much, I took his idea and turned it into, why don't we try to do something nationally and really build it around Saratoga? And that was really the birth of our relationship with NYRA. And we just found ways to make it bigger and bigger ever since. So I have a very longstanding interest in the game. As I say, my brother has made a career out of it. It's really unfortunate that that interest doesn't necessarily translate into a lot of winning tickets. but we're happy to have placed a winning bet on the Belmont. We'll take that instead of winning wagers, I guess.
Hey, Mike, some people will tell you that sports betting, the legalization of sports betting across the country, is the worst thing that ever happened to horse racing because it's so much competition. That's good. You know, might cannibalize the horse racing market. And some people might say it's one of the best things that ever happened because if horse racing can piggyback off of sports wagering, it's going to be a good thing. Now, in order for that to happen, the conventional wisdom is that we have to go to fixed odds wagering. For instance, now, if on Saturday I want to bet on the Rams, I have to go to Fox Bets. If I want to bet on the sixth John Green's horse in the sixth race at Aqueduct, I have to go to NYRA Bets. How do you see this working out down the road? And what would be the best scenario, not only for racing, but for, you know, the ADW and bet taking websites so that everybody is happy at the end of the day and horse racing can latch on to the sports betting market?
That's a lot to respond to. So I'll try to take it in parts. You know, I am a believer that the legalization of sports betting is a positive for horse racing. And primarily the reason I believe that is that I think we're already seeing a normalization of the activity of wagering. And there's a very fine line for us to walk there. You know, I think we want to encourage people to see it as an activity that can enhance the experience of sports fandom. It can make a game or a race a lot more engaging if you have a small amount of money on it. But we also want to encourage, obviously, responsibility in that activity. So I think all of us who are invested in this have an opportunity to mainstream the activity of betting, but mainstream it also with an obvious eye toward making sure that we're encouraging people to approach it with responsibility. And I think that mainstreaming is really going to elevate horse racing, and we're seeing it already. I mean, certainly there's nothing in the handle figures over the last couple years since the overturning of PASPA that would suggest to you that legalized sports betting is hurting interest in horse racing in any way. I mean, the early evidence seems to be quite the contrary. And then I think, you know, I don't know that I'm necessarily the most well-informed person on that topic of what the future of the wagering experience looks like. I mean, you're right that horse racing and sports betting are currently kind of coexisting on parallel tracks. And it seems logical that eventually that will become a more seamless experience. You know, right now we've got our Fox Bet brand and we've got our NYRA Bets brand in which we're only a minority partner. And you would think that eventually you want those to be one experience. It doesn't make that much sense for that to be two separate brands and two separate experiences. But I think it's going to take some time, and we have some some issues to work through before we can make that a more seamless experience for the user. But clearly, I think that's where we would all expect things to be.
Mike, I got one more question before we let you go, and I'm going to give you a chance to pat yourself on the back. You and Nider pat yourselves on the back a little bit here. The handle figures for the sport have been very good over the last couple of years, but Nider in particular, the handle figures have been exceptional, and it does seem to coincide with the broadcasts on Fox, America's Day at the Races, and Saratoga Live. You know, so the question is, how much is the added TV coverage adding to the popularity of the brand and to the amount of wagering on it? Now, I mean, to answer that in any kind of specific numbers is obviously impossible. But I mean, you would probably understand this as well as anybody else. How much do you think this television exposure is improving Naira's business line, their bottom line?
Well, you know, my answer to that question is in no way objective, right?
Exactly.
I mean, I have obviously the most biased opinion that a person can have. But clearly, I do believe that the daily television coverage has made a big difference. And if you look just at Saratoga specifically, you know, not only did Saratoga break a handle record for the meet in 2021, it broke that record by $100 million. I mean, it broke it by just an absolutely enormous amount. And not that much has changed. Clearly, a lot has changed since 2020, but not that much has changed since 2019 or 2018. What's really changed in the last 5 years is that we're there with a tremendous crew and great on-camera talent covering those races for 5 hours a day, every day. And I think it's made a big impact. And you're right. I think, you know, the jewel events of the sport across the board have really positive handle trends, whether it's the Breeders' Cup or the Del Mar meet, the Keeneland meet, the Triple Crown events. But I do think Naira is sort of in a category of its own in having a really accelerated growth trend. And I like to think that our coverage has a lot to do with it. And I'll go a step further with that, actually, because we now have this legalization of sports betting. Every league and every media company is sort of struggling with this idea of how are we going to integrate wagering into our presentation of sports going forward? How do we make that work? And I actually think that the template for all of sports lives inside horse racing right now. I mean, in horse racing, we're very comfortable with the idea of wagering conversation and coverage of the event just as a sports event living side by side. It happens in the Triple Crown. We do it every day on America's Day at the Races. And I think what you see in horse racing is what all of sports coverage is going to look like 10 or 20 years from now, where coverage of the event just encompasses discussion of the wagering.
Yeah, the only thing I would say, Mike, is the $100 million handle increase. You know, Andy Serling is taking full credit for that on his own. I mean, he said, you know, the more that you put him out to the audience, the more likely it is people are going to bet. So
he's probably personally putting 10% of that through the windows on his own. So he has a right to take.
Then you're paying him too much.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Well, Mike, thanks so much for joining us on the Green Group Guest of the Week here on the TDN Writers Room podcast. Terrific news that Fox is so involved in horse racing and exposing it to the masses as it is. And we'll catch up with again soon.
Thank you. It's a blast for us. It's great for our company. We love being involved, and I hope we can do a lot more. Hope we can do this again soon.
Thank you, Mike. The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting and tax consulting advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. This week's guest, Mike Mulvihill, will receive a free one-hour tax consultation. Learn more at www.greenco.com. We'll be right back after this message from The Green Group.
Why do the most successful owners, breeders, and horsemen select the Green Group as their tax advisor? We simply save them money and know how to make them more successful. Over the past 40 years, founder Leonard Green has owned and bred some of the best racehorses in the history of the sport. His in-depth, hands-on industry knowledge, combined with cutting-edge tax-saving strategies, has produced positive results for his clientele and has made the Green Group the top-rated accounting and tax firm in the business. For a confidential and complimentary consultation, contact us at 732-634-5100 or visit our website at www.greenco.com. The Green Group, proven strategies to save you taxes. All the thrills. Fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
The TVN Writers Room is brought to you by West Point Thoroughbreds. Joining a West Point Thoroughbreds partnership can vault you into the world of instant camaraderie among people surrounding high-class horses and stakes action for a fraction of the cost of trying to do it on your own. Learn more at westpointtb.com. Well, in the news for West Point over the last week, West Point has a three-year-old on the Derby Trail this year with Great Game, who was third in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, is now pointing towards the Holy Bull next weekend. This week, he was ranked sixth on T.D. Thornton's TDN Derby Top 12. This weekend, West Point will have a stakes winner county final running in the Stonerside Sprint Stakes at Sam Houston with Steve Asmussen. And West Point is, of course, one of the co-owners of the very, 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 very exciting Flight Line, who John Sadler, the trainer, says will likely run next in March, but has not yet said which race he is going to run in. So let's turn our attention now to another guy who is miscreant. Is that a good word to use? I think that's probably pretty accurate. Wayne Potts, and we've talked about him on the show before. He's had a lot of problems, including an incident where he was thrown out the Maryland Jockey Club tracks that alleged that he was a paper trainer for Marcus Vitale. You know, he's been one of those guys who it doesn't seem like he can get through a year without some sort of scandal. And the latest thing that happened was last week, the New Jersey rulings were released, and it was found that Potts was suspended 30 days by the Monmouth racing officials after he ran a horse in a claiming race, and the track vet ordered him to put the horse on the van, the horse off the track, and he refused to do so. Now, they gave him 30 days in New Jersey, so he will miss the first 30 days of the Monmouth meet. But what is even more relevant is that Potts has been racing in New York. And again, this kind of ties back to the Baffert situation a little bit. You look at somebody like Wayne Potts, who has had a lot of problems, and Baffert's lawyers could bring up, well, why are you picking on my guy when Wayne Potts or fill in the blanks has done all these sort of things. So what's going on here is that now NYRA looks like Wayne Potts is going to get the Bob Baffert treatment. And this is a statement from Pat McKenna that he put out about Wayne Potts. He is the spokesman for the New York Racing Association. Because in just the last 5 months, Wayne Potts has been suspended by both the New York State Gaming Commission and the New Jersey Racing Commission due to conduct in direct violation of the rules of racing. Most recently, Mr. Potts has proven to have jeopardized the health and safety of a horse by refusing to allow the horse to enter an equine ambulance as directed by a regulatory veterinarian. This is a particularly egregious breach of his fundamental responsibility as a trainer to ensure the well-being of horses under his care. NYRA has afforded Mr. Potts the privilege of stabling and racing at our venues, but this pattern of conduct calls into question whether he should continue to enjoy that privilege. NYRA is gathering the necessary facts to support a statement of charges and a formal administrative hearing to potentially suspend Mr. Potts from participating in racing at Aqueduct Racetrack, Belmont, and Saratoga. In the near term, NYRA is determining immediate options, such as revoking his stall allotment at Belmont. John, you know, this is the type of thing that, you know, we've talked about over the years, and maybe racing is moving a little bit in the right direction. But I think Wayne Potts is one of those ones where you can, you know, bring up the question, you know, it's not three strikes and you're out. It's 9-10 strikes and you're still not out. And, you know, racing definitely has a history of, you know, kind of a slap on the wrist type of thing. So, you know, what do you think of what Wayne Potts has been allegedly done? And what do you think should happen to him going forward?
Well, Bill, you're 1,000% correct, because it's not just a one-off, two-off, three-off, nine-off, 10-off. According to ThoroughbredRegulatoryRulings.com, he's had over 90 violations in seven different states. So this isn't a, oops, you know, sorry, my dog ate my homework, I'll do better next time. This is a recurring pattern. Again, some of them are administrative. Some of them are not getting the jockey club papers in on time, or, you know, or notifying the racing commission that a horse was gelded. But the majority of the indiscretions are medication ruling or just flaunting and saying to hell with you, you know, about the rules. I mean, here's a guy who, you know, basically paid another trainer to claim a horse in a race for one of his owners, and then the horse was transferred to his barn 3 or 4 days later. That was a $2,000 fine and a violation in the state. And then what's most egregious to me is that he basically committed animal cruelty. because a horse that he ran in a claiming race was claimed. He was hoping the horse was going to get claimed. And even though the state vet told the groom, you need to put this horse on the van in order to get it back to the stabling area. That's the barn area. That's how badly off the horse was. He then overruled the vet and told his groom, don't put that horse on the van. And it wasn't because he thought the horse was sound enough to walk to the backstretch. It was because he knew the rule. He knew that if that horse stepped foot on that van and got assistance back to the barn area, that the claim would automatically be voided. And to me, if that doesn't smack of animal cruelty and just total disregard for the horses that you have in your barn, then I don't know what does. But here's a guy who repeatedly in multiple states has had violation after violation and has been sanctioned by commission after commission. And yet, you know, it's like Groundhog Day. New day dawns and he's running horses again. And to me, you know, as you know, we all beat up on Bob Baffert because he is the face and the lightning rod of the industry. But it's crappy trainers like this guy who basically doesn't care one iota about the horses in his barn unless they can earn him money. And as soon as they can't earn him money, they're kicked to the curb and he's on to the next one. I mean, to me, those are the kind of trainers that we need to rid our industry of. Because they just laugh whenever they get fined. Oh, I'll take it out of the winnings. No big deal. $500 fine, big deal. $2,000 fine. Here, you want it in tens or twenties? I mean, that's what happens with a lot of these guys once they get to a certain level. And these are the guys that are the pieces of crap that keep floating, you know, from one state to the other.
Brian, before I go to you, let me jump in with John. So we don't know what New York is going to do yet, though it seems like they're taking this very seriously. And just like when we started with Michael Sanchez, are you okay with and just this incident resulting in a 30-day suspension in New Jersey? You know, he's going to miss the first month of, as things stand now, miss the first month of the meet. And then at least in New Jersey, it looks like it'll be business as usual.
Yeah. And again, that's the inconsistency that we have from one jurisdiction to the other. Another reason why we need to have a centralized set of rules. And Bill, you mentioned Monmouth and, you know, not that I want Monmouth to be the whipping boy here, but man, they were the safe haven for Jason Service and for the juice man, Jorge Navarro. And they not only were a safe haven for Wayne Potts last year, when he became leading trainer, I remember very distinctly, they put out a huge press release about how proud they were of Wayne Potts and his record and the fact that he's a rags to riches guy. And he's the guy that we should all rally behind. And Monmouth Park couldn't be prouder. And the reason why I remember it so well is because I actually texted it to Joe and said, this isn't going to age well.
Right. Brian?
It kind of reminds me of like the Rick Dutrow saga. I mean, he was banned for 10 years, kind of for, I think, a lot of just infractions adding up, maybe similar to some of the stuff that Potts, you know, not exactly the same, but kind of the same idea, just a habitual rule breaker. Obviously, Dutrow was probably a little higher profile trainer of the two, but it's kind of the same idea. I mean, maybe Naira's too busy with all the Baffert stuff to you know, focus all their attention on Potts and kind of go for a similar banishment. But, you know, you do kind of wonder if at a certain point you can only give a guy so many chances. And, you know, all indications are that he's kind of outworn his welcome.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's very significant what's going on with Naira here. You know, OK, everybody deserves their day in court, but they already have taken action to try to ban two trainers, Baffert and Marcus Vitale. Let's not forget about him. And now if they go ahead with this with Potts, that would be three. You know, this is the same racing organization that I don't really recall them banning anybody for anything over many, many years. So at the very least, you know, I think they deserve some kudos for, you know, realizing that there's a problem here and that they need to be proactive about it. And so that is the case. All right. So enough with the all the bad stories. Let's turn to the racetrack back again. It was an interesting weekend of racing last week, primarily at the fairgrounds where they ran one of their big Saturday cards with, chalked up with stakes race. You had the Silver Bullet Day for three-year-old fillies. You had LeCompte for three-year-old colts and a really good race, just a grade three, the Louisiana Stakes, but it featured a rematch for, I think, the fifth time between Mandaloon and Midnight Bourbon, with Mandaloon coming out on top. John, we'll start with you. What were you thought was some of the highlights of last week at Fairgrounds?
Well, you nailed it, Bill. I mean, to me, the even though there was an Oaks prep and a Derby prep, and there were points that were being allotted and won, you know, by hitting the board in those respective races, the race of the weekend was the Louisiana Stakes, and again, another match race. We talked about the match race coming up this week with Nixco and Life is Good. I think you could make a case that you know, Midnight Bourbon and Mandaloon were just as much of a match race as we expect the Pegasus to be this weekend. And Bill, you're right. I actually counted it up. The Mandaloon and Midnight Bourbon have faced each other six times, you know, which is really a lot when you think about, you know, Midnight Bourbon has run 13 times and Mandaloon has only run eight. Well, now nine and 14 times. So in Mandaloon's, you know, brief career of nine starts, six of them have been in the same gate as Midnight Bourbon. And I'm sure when they see each other, they're just like, dude, we're running again. Yeah. All right. We'll see at the finish line. But it was really an exciting race. And almost from the get-go, you know, they opened up on the rest of the field and just kept right on going. Midnight Bourbon was adding Lasix and blinkers for the first time. So it wasn't a surprise that he went right to the front and slowed it down in 24-1 and 48. Mandaloon, you know, it was his first start since winning the Haskell, you know, I guess he got kissed up for the win, but that was back in mid-July. So he really had some rust to kind of knock off, and he sat off the speed. They went toe-to-toe, like two great racehorses were, and they both ran, you know, near lifetime best numbers, depending on what metric you're using. But to me, the Louisiana Stakes was far and away better than the Silver Bullet Day, you know, where the horse Lacrete won in her second start and ran a 74 buyer. And I believe, Brian, in the LeCompte, you know, there was a lot of speed in the race and they just kind of beat each other up. And then Epicenter just, you know, got tired. And the winner, Call Me Midnight, just kind of came out from the sky because the first two horses just knocked the crap out of each other.
Yeah, I mean, I really like Epicenter coming out of the LeCompte. I thought he ran great. You know, did all the dirty work early. Just kind of got run down. You know, the other horse used the entirety of that long fairground stretch just to grab him at the last second. Epicenter still galloped out in front, has good form overall. He's kind of this year's Midnight Bourbon. I think like this time in their career, if you probably look at their PPs, they're probably a little bit similar. So he's kind of the horse I want going forward in that for you know, derby type horses. So he's kind of the one that caught my eye over the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, a couple other things I'd add to it. And both Mandaloon and Midnight Bourbon look like they're going on to the Saudi Cup. So they'll be in the same starting gate again, halfway across the world. Even though she only got a 74 buyer, I like Lacrete, just because, you know, you've got the fact that she's a half to Clairier in the Asmussen barn. I think we're probably going to see bigger and better things from her. And I thought one of the main stories in LeCompte was that Papa Cap, he was third, correct? You know, I don't think the connections in Marcassi can be too pleased with that. But long way to go before we get to the Kentucky Derby or the Kentucky Oaks. So we'll see what happens with those horses going down the road. Want to remind you that the TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Legacy Bloodstock. If you think that 50 years of combined experience in the horse business could benefit your program, give Tommy or Wendy a call. They personally advise on each horse as if they were their own. Legacy will be represented at the upcoming Fasic Tipton February sale. The roster for the sale includes broodmares, broodmare prospects, and short yearlings. Legacy grad and TDN rising star Prime Factor was a winner in his four-year-old debut over the weekend at Fairgrounds. Son of Quality Road sold for $900,000 at the 2019 Keeneland September sale. Now a message from Legacy Bloodstock.
Being a small family business, I guess we're part of a dying breed. We're really grateful for the people that entrust us. We know it's a huge responsibility.
We're always with your horse. Every step of the way, when it comes to being at the sales ground, showing your horses, we are with your horse.
Just driving up down the road every day, there's not a time that I don't look out and feel a responsibility to the sport, the animal, the people that come to invest in the game. I want to see as many people enjoy this sport as they possibly can, because we do have the most beautiful sport in the world.
Well, that's a wrap for this week's TDN Writers Room podcast. I'm Bill Finley. I filled in this week for Joe Bianca. He'll be back next week. Want to thank John Green. And it's good to have Brian DiDonato back after a long absence. Thank you for filling in. Also, we want to thank our Green Group guest of the week, Mike Mulvihill, and our team, executive producer Patty Wolf, associate producer Katie Petruniak, our editors, Anthony LaRocca, Leah LaRocca, and Nathan Wilkinson. We'll be back next week. Thanks for tuning in to the TDN Writers Room podcast.